As a reader and as a writer, you know, that's my main focus. Like, all plot flows from character for me. Like, there's no plot, and then the characters get fit into the plot. Like, that's just not the way it works. It's like, I hear a character voice, and that character reveals him or herself to me on the page as I write.
Do you want to write characters with as much depth as a New York Times and international best-selling author? Today, we're going to hear how Lisa Unger writes the kinds of characters that feel so incredibly real. This episode contains advice and a mindset around character development that I've never heard before, and it might just change how you think about writing your characters. I'm David Gwynn, an agented writer navigating the world of traditional publishing. During this first season of the Thriller 101 podcast, we're going to focus on building the skills necessary to write the kind of thrillers that land you an agent and readers. I'm talking to agents, authors, and other industry professionals about the best way to write a novel. If you want the expert secrets, this is where you're going to find them. Last week on the podcast, I talked to literary agent Sandy Liu about what she looks for in a submission.
Some authors are just so plot-driven, they forget about the human element. You can just substitute characters, you know, but why would we care about these particular characters? That has to be clear. Because everything, you know, all genre fictions are tropes, right? I mean, so why should we care about one book versus the other if it's a similar plot?
Then we talked about one of the submissions to the Thriller 101 podcast, and she shared why she was requesting the full manuscript. If you want to check out that episode, it's linked in the description. And if you want to submit your pitch and the first 500 words or so for agents to review, then there's a link for that in the description as well. Today's guest is Lisa Unger. She's a New York Times and internationally best-selling author of 20 novels, including Confessions on the 745 and Secluded Cabin Sleep 6. An award-winning and acclaimed writer with millions of readers worldwide, Lisa is widely regarded as a master of suspense. Her books are published in 33 languages and have been voted Best of the Year or Top Picks by The Today Show, Good Morning America, Entertainment Weekly, Amazon, IndieBound, and many others. In 2019, her novel Under My Skin and her short story The Sleep Tight Motel were both nominated for the prestigious Edgar Award. Her nonfiction work has appeared in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, NPR, and Travel and Leisure. Lisa lives on the west coast of Florida with her family. Lisa has so much to share, so let's get straight to the interview.
Lisa, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to chat with you. Your novel, The New Couple in 5B, will be out by the time people hear this. So how does it feel?
Oh, awesome. I mean, I swear, it's like, it literally is the only thing I ever wanted to do with my life. Like, I've been writing since I was a kid, and I never thought I would do anything else. So I'm still just really grateful that I get to do it. You know, so whenever that box comes with like the first copy of the published book, I still to this day feel like a kid on Christmas morning, like a little bit in disbelief that I'm able to do it.
That's actually what I was wondering about. I mean, this is 20 plus times you've had 21. A novel come out.
Yeah.
Is it still as exciting?
It is, of course. Yeah, because it's crazy because, you know, I'm in a different headspace when I write. You know what I mean? Like, I never really think about that the book is going to publish when I'm writing, even though I have a contract and I know it's going to publish. I never really think about that. So I'm always like just a little bit gobsmacked, you know, when it comes, like, oh my God, you know, I did it. Because most writers know that before you get published, there's not a lot of pats on the back, right? Like, there's not a ton of people that say, oh, yeah, you could do this, right? Like,
definitely not.
A lot of people who say, like, the opposite. And so, you know, I'm always, like, a little bit amazed at, like, oh, wow, I'm really doing it. 21 years in, I'm like, whoa. So, yeah, I still feel pretty excited.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So before we get any further, why don't you tell us a little bit about The New Couple in 5B?
The New Couple of 5B is about a young couple, Rosie and Chad. Rosie is a true crime writer and Chad is an actor. And they inherit a dream apartment in an iconic New York City building. And, you know, their luck has been all bad leading up to this. So they can hardly believe that they've, you know, received this gift. And so, but as soon as they move in, you know, things start to get a little weird. They have some weird neighbors, and it starts to become clear, which, you know, Rosie kind of already knew, because the Windermere, which is the building, is the subject of her upcoming true crime book. And she starts to understand that the building has an extremely dark history. And she has to find out the secrets of the Windermere before she too falls under its spell.
Yeah, so much fun to read, as always. Can't recommend enough. I really, really enjoyed it. And this book is getting some really great early praise. I mean, Kirkus called it propulsive. It's on most anticipated lists at BookPage, Goodreads, SheReads, Deadly Pleasures, Mummy Pages. It's on Gen 20's list of can't-miss books in 2024. However, by far your coolest praise, and I'm wondering if you know where I'm going with this, is Sarah Michelle Gellar, who is an avid reader and loves your stuff. What does that feel like?
Oh my God, that is like such a total mind blow, which is such a funny story too, because she discovered my books independently of me, and she was, because she's an avid reader. And so she happened to write a little piece about something that she was reading. This is for a magazine a long time ago. And so I went on Instagram and I followed her and I wrote to her and said, oh my gosh, thank you so much. And of course, she wasn't following me. So, you know, my note probably went in with, you know, other people writing to Sarah Michelle Gellar. But eventually she did find my note.
Oh,
and
wow. She
wrote me back. And I was like, just completely beyond fangirling. Yeah. And I said, you know, I'd love to send you a copy of my next book. And so every year I send her I sign a copy
for
her,
cool.
And I send it to her, and she's very kind and supportive, and you know, and she's like, I mean, it's Buffy.
I know. It's so cool.
This is like every child of the 80s, 90s, whatever. Like, you know, she's just amazingly talented and wonderful and sweet, and it's just a very cool thing.
Yeah, that's so cool. Nothing against Kirkus, but
no, I was Kirkus. Yay.
Right, exactly. But it's Buffy.
Love you, Kirkus.
Let's dig in a little bit on the new couple in 5B. How did you come up with this story?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's always like, for me, there's usually like a germ, or, you know, like something that leads me to like a swath of research, right? Like I get obsessed about things and just start to like try to learn everything I can about that thing. And then usually there's a voice or voices that might come in. And those are the voices that I follow through the manuscript. In this case, it was a couple of things that were like not as immediate as they usually are. So the Windermere, the building, is an amalgamation of like my memory and my imagination from my aunt's apartment where she lived during my childhood. And she lived in an apartment on Park Avenue. And it was like, as a kid, it was like, to me, it was like the ultimate New York City apartment. It was like in this beautiful small building in Murray Hill, you know, the awning, it had the doorman, the elevator man, just like a sun-washed parquet floor, like New York City icon, right? Like just this beautiful place. And I loved going there, except that my aunt was a very glamorous woman. She worked in fashion and, you know, she was complicated. She was a complicated person. And so our visits there were often very complicated. So there was another layer to this beautiful place where I would just be like, wow, you know, and yet there was also other stuff going on. So that's always, for me, is very interesting. You know, the juxtaposition of light and dark. When something is beautiful, you know, or wonderful, of course, there's always a shadow. So, and that's what I'm interested in, is the liminal space between those two things. So that was part of it. That kind of kicked around in my head for a really long time. And then I recently, a few years ago, reread Rosemary's Baby by Ira Levin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've read recently that or his other books, like The Stepford Wives, but they're all brilliant. And to this day, they're brilliant. They completely stand up. And so there are some pieces of that really inspired me, and that sort of started to come up when I started to write about this building. And so it was a little bit of a combination of those things. And then there was like a third piece for this one, which was, I don't know if you recall, of course, you know Sarah Weinman. She's the New York Times Book Review editor and an amazing best-selling true crime writer. And she wrote an article for The Cut a few years ago about, not about the Central Park Five, but about the man who got away because the wrong people were arrested and the women that he went on to rape and murder and their stories, which is so seldom told. You know, the story is always about the killer. It's like everybody knows Ted Bundy's name. Can anybody name one person that he murdered? It's something that we need to look at. So it was that piece that kind of was the seed for Rosie being a true crime writer. And I have like the first book that she wrote, not the one that she's writing now, but the first book sort of loosely was inspired by what Sarah wrote. So there were all these different like weird little pieces that kind of clicked and gelled together when I started writing The New Couple on 5B.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I talked to a lot of writers, and it always seems like it's that. It's never like a thing. It's always some smashing together of two things or three things. And it's what takes off.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So people who write like I do, people who have been writing since childhood, people who you never stop writing. I mean, I'm never not writing. It's never like, oh, I took a year off between books. No, that's never happened. Yeah, I'm always, so it's like there's always like something going on. And then you're an amalgamator anyway, like as an author, you know, you're just taking in all kinds of information all the time. It has to have some place to go. And if you're like the kind of writer that I am, then you can't not be writing, because then you just, I don't know, you just go crazy, maybe. Like there's a lot of, there's like almost like an exorcism. It's like a daily exorcism. Mm-hmm. It's got to find a way onto, it's got to find its way somewhere. Hopefully it's onto the page, right? All this stuff.
That's really cool. How much can you tell us about what you're working on now? What's your next project?
Well, I can't tell you anything. I'm definitely not ready to talk about it, but it's done. It's done.
Oh, wow.
It is. I'm just about to do the copy editing. I just have a personal rule that I never talk about it until right before it's supposed to publish.
Because that's cool.
The truth is that I don't really 100% know what it's about yet. I won't know until another year. When I've had time to think about, that's what it was. That's
some space.
I need a little space from it. So, but I will say that it will be psychological suspense and bad things will happen for sure. and it's also based on something that it's based on a real place and something that happened to me when I was traveling.
Oh, wow. Oh, I love the clues. Well, Sarah Michelle Gellar and I are both waiting, which is something I thought I would never say. I never had an opportunity to say that before. Now
I know, that's cool. You and Sarah Michelle Gellar, you're like that.
We have something in common, finally. So you've written, like I said, this was your 21st. So the one that's coming out next is the one you kind of are on copy edits now. It'll be your 22nd.
Yeah.
And it seems like you kind of hit your stride at one book per year. You're under contract, moving things along. What does that process look like for you? What does that feel like? I mean, are you working on one project at a time, or do you have a couple things going all at once?
Yeah, there's always like one point during the year, which is like a tiny bit psychotic. And this is it, actually.
I looked at your tour dates, by the way.
That's right. It's so crazy. Every time I look at the tour dates, I'm like, you know, I do have a physical body that I have to
you have to get from one place to the next.
That's right. It's not, we're not teleporting. So I'm not sure how that's all going to work, but I assume we'll get where we need to go.
Yeah.
So this is the moment where I'm doing the copy edits on the 2025 book. I'm promoting the 2024 book. And I'm writing the 2026 book. So that's this moment. And it's always completely nuts. It's always like, I'm always like, why am I so tired? My husband's like, I don't know.
Can't come up with a single reason, right?
Why am I collapsing into a pile of myself at the end of the day? I don't get it. But yeah, it is definitely, that's this moment right now when the book is about to come out. And I'm, you know, I've got, so I'm in three different headspaces. And this year I also published a novella and a short story. I published a short story in January and then a novella in October.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's a little nuts.
Okay, let's pause there for a second. I think it's so interesting to hear how chaotic and intense it is for writers. I mean, just think about juggling three separate books in your head at one time. And I think it's true what we talked about. Coming up with the idea for a novel is really about merging or combining a few ideas. So look for places where you can bring two or three things together. Sometimes those moments make for the best stories. In the next part of the interview, Lisa and I are going to talk about how she develops her characters. Pay close attention because she shares some really useful advice. And at the core of it is this mindset around character development that I just really haven't heard before. But before we get to that, be sure to check out the Thriller 101 newsletter. It has exclusive information, advice, and updates you can only get by being a subscriber. I talk about goal setting, systems, productivity, and I share the best resources and advice for thriller writers from all around the internet. If you want to level up your writing skills, be sure to subscribe. There's a link in the description where you can do that. Let's head back to the interview.
So a lot of writers listen to this podcast, and so I'd really love to just ask you a little bit about the characters in your novel, kind of like generally, but also, you know, with the focus on Rosie and Chad, because they're no exception. Your characters are really like, they're deep, they're flawed, they're really interesting, which I think is another way of saying they like feel like real people. And so how do you go about developing your characters? Is that something that kind of happens naturally, or is it something that you really put a lot of focus on early?
Yeah, it's interesting. As a reader and as a writer, you know, that's my main focus. Like, all plot flows from character for me. Like, there's no plot and then the characters get fit into the plot. Like, that's just not the way it works. It's like, I hear a character voice and that character reveals him or herself to me on the page as I write. A long time ago, I stopped thinking about characters as people that I create and started thinking of them as people that I meet. And it feels really like that for me. I mean, I know that's not the truth of it. You know, I'm the author. Every character is a, you know, mosaic of my experiences, my observations, my things I overhear, things I understand about psychology, you know, my imagination, all of it, right? Like, so every character is that. Every character is in that way a piece of me. But they don't feel like that to me. I feel like I'm meeting them on the page and that they're revealing themselves to me much in the way that anybody would reveal themselves in a relationship. You meet somebody, you see them, there's an energy exchange. Maybe they tell you a few things about themselves. As you get to know them better, you may discover that those things they told you about themselves early on weren't true. Or maybe they reveal themselves through action in a way that their words could never reveal to you. So that's true of people. And it's true character. So, and that's the way I experience it. Like, I really do feel it. And they're my characters are, you know, they're real. They're real to me. They're very real. They're flawed. They're, you know, there's some good, some bad, some more bad than others. Addicted, you know, addled, deranged, murderous, etc.
all the shades of people.
Yeah,
that's good.
And I have a lot of empathy for them, like even the worst among them. And that is, you know, why I think they are alive, because they reveal themselves to me, because I don't judge them, which sounds crazy, but I do believe that.
Well, I think that empathy comes across in the way that you write them, in a way that, like, no one's all bad in life and no one's all good in life. Like, that's, I think that there are, like we said, there are shades and finding the reasons behind why they are the way that they are is something that I think makes your characters feel so real. But tell me if I'm getting this right. Are you just kind of, do you do any plotting before, or you kind of just dive in with character and write where it goes?
Yeah, no, I don't do any plotting. In fact,
I just was surprised, like, one book a year going in without a plan, like flying blind, is frightening to me.
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like that. Like, it's interesting because, like, this is my theory about it, because, like, there's always, like, that big question, like, plotter versus panther, which I hate that word, because it's like, oh, you accidentally wrote a novel, like, by the seat of your pants. It's like, oh, I didn't, you know, educate myself and read every book since the time I was a little kid and go to college and write. In a lot of ways, I feel like because I'm the kind of writer that I am, and because I have been such an avid reader all my life, in a lot of ways, I've just kind of internalized the form of the novel. So it's just kind of the way my brain works, right? There's a story to be told, and it's there. I just have to find it. And so I don't think it's that different, right? Like, I don't think that, like, people who sit down to write the outline and they do a sketch of what the book is going to be, and they do it, and I don't know how long it takes somebody to write an outline, in a week, a month, who knows, right? Like, that's not part of my...
Right.
I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm just doing it over the course of a year, and it's, and then all the different pieces that maybe they're going to go back and try to fill in later. For me, there is no structure without the details. So if I were to create an outline for myself, I would be literally the most miserable person ever. Like, I wouldn't even know what to do. I'd be like, what? Don't tell me what to do. How dare you? Like,
me from the past.
What is this? This stupid idea is this. It doesn't even make any sense. Like, I don't understand how you can know what's going to happen until you know who is populating your story. Like, what would they do? Like, so, you know, I think that they're, you know, like, I'm sure that that's a much better way to do it, you know, outline, but I don't have access to that. Right. And what I have found is that, like, people who write the way I do, we understand each other and we understand how it works. And we have respect for people who do it the other way. However, the same is not always true in reverse. People don't seem to have respect for the way, like, I prefer to think of it as like a gardener. There's a seed that gets planted. It grows. You give it some light and some water and you prune some things and, you know, a flower blooms. Like, that's how I see the writing of a novel. But, you know, like, I've had people just be like, you know, on stage, be like, just kind of a little tiny bit like disparaging. Like, I don't understand. How can you write a book if you don't know how it's going to end? If you don't understand, then I can't tell you.
But also, like, they're reading it. Like, you could just be like, hold up any one of your 20 books and be like, this
it
is
worked.
How.
We got
That's
there.
So funny. Yeah, see, I'm such a plotter. Like, I can't do, and it changes, obviously, my plot, like, changes, but, like, if I sit down and I just start writing, I end up in the weirdest places. So, like, I need something, but I'm so jealous of people who, and I think you said it, like, you've internalized story in a way that, like, that I just, it doesn't compute for me. Like, I feel like I'm juggling too much if I don't have, like, some type of plan going in. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, and I think that you don't get to choose. Right? You don't choose that, right? And there's no right or wrong way to write a novel. That's the other important thing. Like, your way is right for you, my way is right for me. And that's just what it is.
I could talk to you forever. This is so much fun. I am thoroughly enjoying this conversation. And I think a lot of aspiring writers, if you're listening to this right now, the way that Lisa develops her characters, develops her plot, you got to go grab this book. The New Couple in 5B, which is out today. It's out right now. Go get it immediately if you're listening to this. My last question for you is just, where can people find you? Where can people look you up?
Oh my goodness. I'm so easy to find. It's ridiculous. It's almost pathological how easy it is. So my website is lisaunger.com. I think I'm my most authentic self on Instagram and Facebook, of course, and then I don't know. What do we call it now? Twitter X?
People are struggling with it every time.
I don't know. My newsletter goes out on Substack. And I mean, like, there's just like every piece of information that you need.
It's easy. It's easy to find. And for, like, people who are listening, I will link to that stuff. So you've got quick access to Lisa. So,
yeah. I mean, and I do respond, you know, usually to my detriment in real time. So if you feel the need to connect, you know, please. Oh, and if you sign up for my newsletter, this is like my one salesy thing. If you sign up for my newsletter, you get a free short story.
I'm a newsletter subscriber, so I highly recommend it. People hop on and you get some great stuff. So, Lisa, this was so much fun. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat.
That's so great. Thank you so much, David. It was really fun.
Okay, so that's it. Did you catch some of that advice about character development? Just that mindset shift of imagining your characters as someone real who you meet can make a huge difference in helping them reveal themselves not as you want them to be, but as they really are. That kind of shift will translate into more realistic characters and a stronger connection with your readers. Between that and all the other great advice, I hope you got as much out of this interview as I did. Next time on the podcast, I'll be talking to Ash Clifton about his debut novel, Twice the Trouble. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and check that out next week.